This is Championship Weekend. AFC and NFC Championship games are on Sunday. This is my personal favorite weekend of football, the two conference championship games. I love the Super Bowl, but there isn't all the non-football stuff associated with the AFC and NFC Championship games. Today, I will have former Denver Broncos offensive lineman Dan Neal with me. He was a member of two Super Bowl winning teams. Many of you might remember him being on the show earlier in the season and providing outstanding insight. Today, he will share what it's like to prepare for the AFC Championship game and also what he sees going into this weekend. Also on this show, Minnesota Vikings Hall of Fame defensive end Carl Eller. Eller was a member of the famed Purple People Eaters defensive line and played in four Super Bowls with the Vikings. First, I'm going to take some time to give you my thoughts on this weekend. Before the playoffs, I said I thought the Bengals and 49ers were the two teams most likely to go to the Super Bowl, and they are both one game away. Both of these conference championship games are only the second playoff matchup of all time between the teams. Kansas City and Cincinnati met for the first time in the playoffs during last year's AFC championship game. San Francisco and Philadelphia met in the 1996 wild card round, and the 49ers won that game 14-0. Let's talk about the NFC championship game. For much of the season, I've been mentioning that the Eagles rarely turn the ball over, and that's been one of the keys to their success. They didn't lose a fumble until midway through the season. The 49ers, they are on a 12-game win streak, and during that streak, they have only turned the ball over six times, never more than once in a game. That's remarkably better than even the Eagles during that stretch. And on defense, the 49ers have caused multiple turnovers in 9 of their last 10 games. The Eagles' defense hasn't gotten multiple turnovers in a game since getting 2 against the Packers in November. Both of these teams are really good at protecting the football, and I'm really interested to see if either of these teams can get a takeaway from each other. I think this has the possibility of being a really great game. Both excellent defenses and both offenses protect the ball. Both can run well, but I think the addition of Christian McCaffrey favors San Francisco's run game. Now, what am I watching for in this game? First of all, Brock Purdy has done a great job for the 49ers, but he hasn't really faced a ton of adversity yet. Like I said, the 49ers haven't turned the ball over much, and I think the most they've been down in a game is 10 points, and that was against the Raiders, and they came back to win. Most of the time, the 49ers have either been ahead or it's been a one-score game while he's been in there. So I'm looking for how he would respond to some serious adversity that might happen in a championship game in a hostile environment. Now, I'm not criticizing him. I'm not saying that I think he's going to fail. I think he's a very composed individual. But I am bringing up the point, we haven't really seen him in a situation like that. So if something were to happen and the Eagles were to get a couple of quick touchdowns, I'm going to be watching for how Brock Purdy might respond to that. Because again, it's an unknown variable. I do think that San Francisco's championship game experience might make a difference early. So I'll be watching for early Philadelphia mistakes that could give the 49ers opportunities. But Purdy could make a young quarterback mistake as well. In fact, there never has been a rookie quarterback to start a Super Bowl. But the 49ers, as a team, have more playoff experience than the Eagles. That makes this game pretty difficult to predict. Two young quarterbacks, two excellent defenses. The first thing I'm looking for to decide this game, like I mentioned before, is if one team finds a way to cause turnovers against an offense that doesn't give very many takeaways. The other thing that's going to help determine this game is which quarterback responds best to the adversity that a championship game is going to bring, because there will be adversity in a championship game. The third thing, and these just a hunch. I have a hunch that either AJ Brown is going to make a big play or two for Philadelphia, and Christian McCaffrey might be a real difference maker for San Francisco. Again, just a hunch. The last two games between these teams have been one score games, so it's likely this game might be close as well. The AFC matchup is equally, if not more, compelling because it's a rematch of last year's game. This is only the fifth time when the same two teams have played in the AFC Championship game in consecutive years. The obvious question is about Patrick Mahomes' injury. He has a high ankle sprain. High ankle sprains are tough. It often takes weeks to recover from a high ankle sprain. Sam Darnold was on IR early this year with a high ankle sprain. Patriots' Mac Jones missed time with a high ankle sprain. Mahomes suffered a high ankle sprain in 2019 and didn't miss time. It really depends on how severe the sprain is. What worries me is if it makes him more susceptible to further injury, either by the sprain becoming worse or whatever Mahomes might be doing to compensate for that injury. He may injure a different part of his body because of how he's adjusting. It opens up a whole slew of new potential hazards in a game that's dangerous by nature. He's also not likely to be as mobile, which is often part of the Mahomes magic. Not always, but often. And he wasn't as mobile against Jacksonville after the injury. But here's something to consider. The Bengals know Mahomes well, but they don't know much about his injury. They don't know what he's going to do to adjust for that injury. They've got all kinds of film on what Mahomes usually does. They know how to prepare for that. They haven't played against Mahomes not having his full repertoire of skills handy. So while the injury limits Mahomes, it also limits the Bengals somewhat in terms of preparation because Mahomes and the Chiefs know exactly what they're going to do coming into this game and how they're going to adjust to Mahomes' injury. The Bengals are going to have to figure that out as the game goes on. So while injuries are never good, in this instance, Kansas City might have a bit of an unpredictable nature that could work in their favor. So I'm going to be watching for that. Of course, Mahomes and his offense gets a lot of the headlines, but I think what is a real difference maker for Kansas City is their front seven on defense. And that front seven has been so key to the Chiefs' success over the past few years, including that Super Bowl win over the 49ers and also in their victory last week. Defensive tackle Chris Jones gets a lot of the attention and he's great, but man, Frank Clark, when he has a big game, in a big game, Kansas City is really tough to beat. That front seven is going to be really important because if the Chiefs can both hurry Burrow and limit the rushing game, that could contain a large part of the Bengals offense. I'm going to stick with my Bengals 49ers Super Bowl prediction that I made before the playoffs, but I will admit that both of these games are likely too close to call. And that would mean both road teams would win the conference championship game. Well, when was the last time that happened? Well, if you've been listening to this show for a while, you probably know I looked that up. It was 2012. The 49ers won at Atlanta and the Ravens won at New England. Both winning teams shut out their opponents in the second half. And the Ravens went on to defeat San Francisco in Super Bowl 47. That 2012 AFC Championship game and this year's AFC Championship have something rare in common. Two teams meeting in the AFC Championship game for the second year in a row. I mentioned that this was only the fifth time that has happened. The last time it happened was when the Patriots and Ravens faced each other in the 2011 and 2012 AFC Championship games. As I said before, this year marks the fifth set of teams to meet at least 2 years in a row. The other three times were the Broncos and Browns in the mid-80s, the Steelers and the Houston Oilers in 1978 and 1979. And the Steelers and Raiders played each other 3 years in a row from 1974 through 1976 in the AFC Championship game. There's a blog post about the Steelers-Oilers rivalry in the 1970s on thegamebeforethemoney.com. Steelers linebacker Jack Ham spoke about that in episode 63 of the Game Before the Money podcast. And you can also learn a lot about that rivalry in my book, Red, White, and Columbia Blue, Chasing the Dream with the 1979 Houston Oilers. Again, that's Red, White, and Columbia Blue, Chasing the Dream with the 1979 Houston Oilers, available wherever fine books are sold. I'm Jackson Michael. This is The Game Before the Money. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com. Coming up, former Denver Broncos and Texas Longhorns offensive lineman Dan Neal. And later, interviews with Carl Eller and former NFL exec Upton Bell. Former Denver Broncos and Texas Longhorns offensive lineman Dan Neal is on the line. He was part of two Super Bowl winning teams with the Denver Broncos with John Elway at quarterback and Mike Shanahan as the head coach. Of course, Mike Shanahan's son is Kyle Shanahan, the current head coach for the San Francisco 49ers. Dan started in the AFC Championship game. He started in the Super Bowl. So let's get right to it with Dan Neal.
The pat answer is always like, this game, you know, we're not approaching it any different than any other game. But what's really going on in those practices?
Well, that's a straight lie if anybody says that. The one thing, though, with the referencing is your preparation's the same. You don't really want to change that because, obviously, what got you to where you are has worked pretty well, and so you want to stick to the same preparation, you know, that keep the week the same. NFL players are slaves to a schedule, so you leave the prep the same, but everyone understands what the stakes are at this week. It's a big game.
Does it differ than the divisional playoff? Yeah.
Here's the best way to put it. Okay. Majority of the guys that play football never play in the Super Bowl. Majority of guys that play in the NFL never play in the Super Bowl. You're one game away from being in that thing. You're not even thinking about whether you win or lose the Super Bowl. You just want to be in it. I mean, just to play in that thing is a childhood dream. And you're one game away. So you got four teams and now all they have to do is win one game and they're in that thing. So yeah, that's a different mindset.
I can see how that is because it's down to just that one game rather than being two games away. That's a lot different.
It is because, I mean, and that's the difference between, you know, not doing the wild card, getting the first week bye and the wild card. The division winners win two to get there. The wild card teams have to win three. And, you know, three playoff games is hard. So, yes, and remember, what is it, a 17-game schedule now plus training camp? You do all that just for this game.
You know, last week we saw the Bengals and Bills. You know, the Bengals had several injuries on that offensive line, and yet they were able to handle that Bills front line. How were they able to do that, do you think, as a unit?
Most often when a team with injuries play well, I give a lot of credit to the coaching, and that is the game plan. You know, they didn't go in there asking too much of these guys. They schemed it well as far as the blocking schemes go and try not to put too much pressure on any individual, especially new young guys. And the best example of that is the Niners and Brock Purdy. I mean, here's a young guy that hadn't played much in the NFL yet. He's looked great. Well, if you look at what they're asking to do, they're not asking to do a whole lot. They're asking just to manage the game because they got enough talent around him, and he's done a great job of that. So that's, I give Kyle Shanahan a ton of credit for them winning because he's put his players in good positions.
Of course, you play for his father, Mike Shanahan. Won a couple of Super Bowls with him. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan also played at Texas, as you did. What do you see in Kyle Shanahan, and do you have memories of him when he was younger?
Oh yeah, no. Kyle, I say I know well. I hadn't talked to him in years, but when we were at Denver, he was in high school, and he used to come work out with us, and you'd see him all the time. And let's say that the success he has is not a surprise to me. Kyle was always very driven, very focused, and really like Kyle, and I'm really happy for his success. And, you know, there's one other aspect of that team, not to get on a divergent here, but, you know, who his quarterback coach is? None other than the guy that his dad drafted, Brian Greasy, out of Michigan.
Oh, wow. And Brian Greasy's dad, of course.
Yeah.
The ultimate game manager, Bob Greasy.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, the reason Purdy's having a lot of success is he's got a good quarterback coach, really smart guy, and knows what he's doing. And so, I mean, that's part of Kyle. Brian, the story about that is Brian called Kyle up and said he went to get the coaching if he had any ideas. And Kyle goes, well, I need a quarterback coach. Come coach for me. And here they are.
Oh, wow. That is great. And you played some with Brian Greasy, correct? What was he like?
Yeah.
And what do you see in Brock Purdy that you maybe saw in Brian Greasy?
I guess the similarities would be that they both strike me as pretty intelligent guys. Maybe not the most talented players as far as throwing the football, but smart and know what they're doing and just make good decisions with the football and have good players around them. Brian did when he was in Denver, and Purdy does in San Francisco. And so, again, going back to Kyle, not asking him to do anything special, just manage the game, and Purdy's doing it.
On the AFC side, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, the Chiefs' interior line on defense is anchored by Chris Jones. And you play guard. What would you guys do to kind of try to neutralize a guy like that?
Well, that goes back to the schematics of it. You know, an offensive line and the essential basics of pass protection, because that's really where I think, you know, Chris Jones is great against the run, but you can't really change your scheme against the run. You can in the pass blocking scheme, and that is don't leave him one-on-one against guys very often. Try to minimize those and double-team him.
What should fans, when they're watching the beginning of the game, like say the start of the Bengals and the Chiefs game, what should they be watching for on the offensive line?
What you want to watch for there is just can they hold up in pass protection and can they get some run the game going? You know, because football is a simple game. You know, it's you must run the ball. You must stop the run. That's the first thing both teams talk about. So if you can get some run game going, you already got the defensive disadvantage because their goal is to stop it. So they're not fulfilling their job. So you got an advantage. But then you're also going to have situations to throw the ball. And if you can give your guy like Mahomes time to throw the ball, he'll tear you apart. You know, you look back to the time the Chiefs lost to the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl, they got pressure on Mahomes. And he wasn't able to get comfortable back there, and that's why they won the game.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, and I've said this on the show because I've heard it from players like you, you know, a lot of times it does come down to who does the fundamentals best, who blocks best and who tackles best, who's going to win.
Almost every time. You know, that's really what it is, and that's why you work on those things all the time. And that's why, you know, the game's evolved, and it is a definite throwing game today, but at the end of the day, when you get to the playoffs and you play good football teams, it boils down to running the football. Who can establish some type of run game? And you don't have to rush for 200 yards. You know, you'd like to see yourself get 100 yards on the ground and give your quarterback time to make plays. Because when you run the ball, all of a sudden you're slowing that pass rush down.
Oh, and that makes a huge – that helps you then in the passing protection aspect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Dan, having won two AFC championships and going on to two Super Bowls, what are some of the standout memories of the AFC championship?
Well, you know, the first one was interesting because we were a wild card team. We were on the road in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh had a really good team. And that was the old Three Rivers, and that was a very tough place to play. And to go on the road and win that game, it was tough, you know, and then the following year we were at home against the Jets, and that was the team we were supposed to beat, but, man, they were good, and we were down at halftime. And then we started running the ball, and then they couldn't stop us, and we ended up winning the game. You know, but, you know, the thing about, you know, both those games, and really our playoff runs, when you start looking at the stats and talking about what the difference was, for us it was really simple. when we got in the red zone, we scored six instead of three. So you got to find a way to get touchdowns instead of settling for field goals. And then our defense created turnovers. So if you can get some turnovers and you can get touchdowns instead of field goals when you're in the red zone, that's a formula to win football games.
Is there anything else you think that's important?
Well, you know, there's just one little anecdote I'll throw in there that's the fan may not realize, but the second of the two games, so obviously there's two games on Sunday, and when you're the second of the two games, when you go take the field, you know who you would play.
Is that an advantage, do you think?
I think it can be. You know, I'll tell you, you know, my experience was when we were playing the Jets, we had already seen the game before us, and that was the Minnesota game against the Falcons, and Minnesota was arguably the best team that year. I mean, we think we were, but they were pretty good. And the Falcons upset them. And we're sitting there in the locker room going, oh my gosh, we can beat the Falcons. We just got to get back. And I say, it hurt our help. I think we almost thought, oh, we got this. And then we were down at halftime against the Jets, you know, and then we turned it on. But we knew who we had, you know, and we totally expected to win that Jet game. And then we did. And then it was a big difference between the Falcons and the Vikings in that Super Bowl.
All right. Special thanks to Dan Neal letting us into that AFC Championship game locker room, giving us the backstory of how Brian Griese became the quarterback coach for the 49ers and telling us what to look for on Sunday. See which of these teams can establish the run and establish it early. And that will help give a clue as to who's got the upper hand. I'm Jackson Michael. This is The Game Before the Money. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com and check out the Game Before the Money podcast. Up next, Hall of Famer Carl Eller. Hall of Fame defensive end Carl Eller is joining the show now. Played 15 years with the Minnesota Vikings. Helped them get to four Super Bowls as part of that Purple People Eaters defensive line. He also played one season for the Seattle Seahawks. And he's here to talk about Gridiron Greats, a great group that assists former players with medical and cost of living expenses, as well as Pork Rind Appreciation Day, which is Super Bowl Sunday. And of course, we're going to talk football, Vikings history. Here's the great Carl Eller.
Gridiron Greats, that's Mike Ditka's foundation. Can you talk a little bit about what former players from the 60s and 70s experience now and what Gridiron Greats is doing to help?
You know, a lot of these injuries are coming back and starting to affect the players that played during my time. And the one thing that people don't realize is that they may be close to a hospital, but a lot of times, you know, they have their travel. And so that helps them travel to get to where they need the therapy or the treatment. And so that's one way that the Gridiron Greats Foundation of Fund helps them. It helps them get there. And also it helps them with the funding too. So it's a very important contribution to the wellness of the players, and it really helps them get the help they need.
Yeah, and I think what you just said, a lot of fans don't realize they hear that maybe somebody's experiencing, you know, some medical problems. And the expenses for that is expensive enough, but then the travel expenses on top of it.
Well, yeah. See, there are some other costs. And also, once you get there, you may have to stay there for a while to get the results or some testing, or maybe there's x-rays or blood tests. So there's housing and all the auxiliary costs that go along with that, Michael. It's, it really builds up.
And Carl, another thing you wanted to discuss was Pork Rind Appreciation Day, which is on Super Bowl Sunday. And you're promoting the Sacks for Snacks sweepstakes. What is that?
Well, it's just Sacks for Snacks sweepstakes. And it's the 14th annual Program Appreciation Day. And so we're counting sack scores and trade them for snacks. You can find out more about it by visiting PokeRyanAppreciationDay.com. And of course, see, there's a grand prize that goes along with this. The prize is $5,000 for the lucky contestant that enters and wins that. And so it's something that goes on. They're supporting the annual time we've done that. And of course, snacks and snacks, both of those right down my alley.
Yeah, that's right, Carl. You're about sacks and snacks for sure.
Right.
Yeah. You guys, well, you know, the Purple People Eaters defensive line you were a part of, you know, meet at the quarterback was your motto. That you guys meet at the quarterback and get a snack there too at the same time.
That would be great. Well, I'll tell you, my club was those were great days. Were great days when they played, but it was a while ago. Some of your fans, I know you've got a lot of them, may not be familiar with that. But yeah, I was with the Purple People Eaters, and I was part of the front four there, and you know, so we really liked the glory that we had in those days.
Now, do you guys keep in touch? You keep in touch with Alan Page and
I keep in touch with Alan and Jim Marshall. Gerd Larson is out on the West Coast. He's out there, I think, in Oregon. And he comes back here, I assume, when he's in town or getting some of the... And that's a good case. So a guy like Gerd, who lives in Oregon, may have to come all the way back to Minnesota for treatment or something like that. But when he's in town, we get together and have a little fun, reminisce a little bit about the old days.
Yeah, well, you guys were a great team, making 4 Super Bowls and you know, Super Bowl IV, and all the way through Super Bowl XI during that time. Now, Super Bowl IV, you know, I'm not sure what the attendance was, but Super Bowl XI, by that time, it had grown to over 100,000. Can you talk about, like, how the Super Bowl grew during your playing career?
Well, the Super Bowl grew tremendously during those early days. We always felt we would win. And I just felt I was really naive, Michael, really, because I just felt that, man, we were going to back to the Super Bowl a second time. I'll be lucky. And we sure going to win. And we thought we would. And we were, I don't know what happened there, but we played in the four. But the incentive was to get back and to win the Super Bowl. But we played some great teams in the Super Bowls, Kansas City and in Miami. So, boy, it was tough go. It was play some tough teams.
Well, you played some tough teams in the playoffs, and you won. You know, I think back to reading about the 1969 playoffs against the Rams. You guys were down 17-7 at the half, and then you came back to win. And, of course, the big play, you getting the safety on Roman Gabriel, to cinch that win. What do you remember about that play?
Well, I remember that play. It was kind of one of my favorite plays. You know, I remember the play because I was playing against a guy named Bob Brown, who was a nemesis of mine all the way from college, all the way through the pro days. But just to give the audience a kind of a, what really happens and what goes through the mind of the defensive player, you have to remember plays from like seasons past and way back. So Gabriel had gotten outside of me, you know, and the defensive end's job is to kind of keep the guy contained. So if you don't get him, some of the other guys who would get him, and he can't escape. And Roman had an escape for me one of the plays earlier in the game or sometime earlier in the season. And I thought that he and Bob Brown would kind of combine to give me that look again, you know, kind of like, okay, Carl, here's an inside move. And I would take that, and then Roman would escape to the outside and be free to throw and have more time to throw the ball. And I thought they would do that. And that's exactly what they did. And then I was right there, and I kind of faked that move where I was going to go inside, but I didn't. And I stayed outside, and Roman took the bait. And I got him for safety in the end zone. And it was a great play. But the important thing about that is it really tells your audience that, man, you have to remember a lot of stuff that goes into playing a position like a defensive end.
Yeah, yeah, and you made a great adjustment there. That's part of the reason why you're in the Hall of Fame, is making adjustments like that.
Well, you have to do that, and you have to know the guy you're playing against. You know, and some of these guys are really strong. You can't either let them grab you or hold you, or, you know, hold you close so the official can't see it. And you have to remember what kind of player you're playing against. Some guys will attack you low, and other guys will stand up straight and, you know, and take you on full body and stuff like that. But all of those little things are really important. And the other thing, you know, if you get one sack out of about 60 plays, that's a big, big day for you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you have to have the grit and determination to keep going at it.
Yeah, you do, because they'll stop you and they'll double team you, or sometimes they'll let you in and give you the outside, but they got help on the outside with a back or something like that. And you don't know whether the back is coming to block you or go out in their pass pattern. So you have to stay alert. But the biggest thing is you really have to remember stuff, you know. Like, it might look the same, but it's not going to be the same.
All right, Hall of Fame defensive end Carl Eller giving us some insight into what's going on the line, knowing your opponent, knowing what he might do, knowing how to use that against him. We're going to come back in the next segment with some more stories from Carl Eller. We're also going to hear from former Colts and Patriots executive Upton Bell. Don't forget about the Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund. You can learn more at gridirongreats.org. And don't forget about Pork Rind Appreciation Day on February 12th. You can sign up for the Sacks for Snacks sweepstakes at Pork Rind Appreciation Day. .com. You could win $5,000. Again, that's Pork Rind Appreciation Day.com and GridironGreats.org. I'm Jackson Michael. This is The Game Before the Money. Don't forget about the GameBeforeTheMoney.com as well. Coming up, more from Carl Eller and former GM Upton Bell. Give his playoff picks. Back with Carl Eller, Hall of Fame defensive end for the Minnesota Vikings. Now, one last thing about games during your career, and one of my very first memories, if not my first memory, was you guys in the 1976 NFC Championship game, and you guys blocking a field goal and Bobby Bryant returning it for a touchdown. Is it similar on field goals when you block that Tom Dempsey attempt? Is it similar? Do you guys remember how a kicker might do things from time to time?
Well, you kind of remember how a guy blocked you or whatever, and particularly if you got close, it would give you an incentive to do this or do that. And particularly if the game is close to it, it might be a game-winning block or, you know, something that will help you win the game, or you will put that extra effort in. So you go after a guy, you try to hit the crack, and say, well, this guy's not sealing that crack, I can get through that. And you remember all that stuff, and so you try maybe a little harder fake or something, or you try to jump a little higher or get through a little quicker or get off the ball a little quicker, whatever. Whatever you can do to make a difference there. Because these guys that are blocking for a field goal have done that so many times during the year, during the season, so they have the down pat. So you're not going to make them do very much. So you have to figure out what you can do, because you see very seldom does an extra point or field goal get blocked.
That's right. It doesn't happen very often. Well, Carl, thanks so much. We really
Love having you on the show. I hope to get a chance to talk to you again real soon. And, you know, again, for the fans, Pork Rind Appreciation Day, how do they sign up for that contest?
Well, they can go to PorkRindAppreciationDay.com and they'll enter to win. That's how they can sign up and find out more information.
And how do people connect with Gridiron Greats?
Well, they can connect the same way with Gridiron Greats. They have a website, Official Gridiron Greats. It's like at Official Gridiron Greats. And they can connect with them on Facebook and some of the other social media.
Hall of Famer Carl Eller there. Don't forget to visit gridirongreats.org and also PorkRindAppreciationDay.com. Next on the line, former Colts executive and Patriots general manager Upton Bell. Upton actually scouted Carl Eller in college, and here's Upton talking about the playoffs.
Let's take the Kansas City game and look at the two quarterbacks. Kansas City, Cincinnati. You've got Burrow, who I compare as far as on-the-field composure to Unitas, Namath to a degree, and of course Tom Brady. You never see them flinch. You never see the attitude on their face change. They're not necessarily, in the case of Burrow, really a great scrambler. Now you have on the other side, you have Patrick Mahomes, who can scramble, who is a tremendous athlete, can do everything. But now you have him limited by a high ankle sprain. I have had a high ankle sprain playing basketball on the college level. Now, I'm not playing football, so I'm not being hit, but I've got to cut, I've got to move, I've got to be able to run. A high ankle sprain, especially on the inside, you might as well have a broken leg. And I give a lot of credit to Mahomes because you can't do any of those things with that. The pain is intense, and it's hard to move, and I think the game's a toss-up. I think you could pick either side and make a perfect argument for them. So I'm going to, based upon, and I could be wrong, based upon the injury situation, how much Mahomes can move, I'm going to pick Cincinnati. If it was the other way around, because it's a toss-up and you usually favor the home team, I would have picked Kansas City. So I'm going with Cincinnati in this game.
All right. So that's the AFC side.
Now we go to the NFC side, because I think this too is a toss-up for this reason. San Francisco, I think, has the best talent of all four teams that are in the conference finals. But I have to be a little leery of Brock Purdy. I know it's been a great story all along, but remember, with Dallas even throwing two interceptions, how close that game was. But if Prescott had a decent day, I think Dallas would have beaten them. On the other hand, the Eagles have a question mark. Now, I think the Eagles almost can match the 49ers as far as talent, both offensively and defensively. The question is on Jalen Hurts. I know they say he's recovered from the shoulder injury, but I put him in the situation of the poor man's Lamar Jackson. Terrific athlete, has had a great year, probably will be the MVP of the NFC. But again, you've got two quarterbacks with doubts about them, less about Hurts, if he is healthy. The Eagles almost match the 49ers as far as talent is concerned. So what am I going to do here? I say that the 49ers have the best talent of all four teams, but I'm going to pick the Eagles. And I'm going to pick the Eagles based only on the fact that Hurts is the more experienced quarterback. They almost have as much talent as the 49ers. And again, I could be totally wrong, but Purdy is not somebody that you go into the game thinking, okay, we've got enough of the other talent, and this kid will do what, you know, Shanahan wants him to do. I don't know. That's a question mark because, again, I go back to Dallas. That game could have been won. That was a low-scoring defensive battle, and this could be the same.
Now, Upton, one last thing I wanted to ask you about this championship weekend was you were director of player personnel for the Baltimore Colts in 1970, and they played in the very first AFC championship game, and that was against the Raiders. What do you remember about that game?
Well, a lot in that I thought we'd blow the Raiders out, but it was fairly close. In fact, it was so funny because John Madden and I had become real good friends. We were both very young at the time, and I had met John actually when he was at San Diego State. And I remember talking to him later about Fred Dreyer, who I loved, and I eventually traded for, although he never played here. But I remember it was a young team. Madden was a young coach trying to prove himself. I was surprised that year that we made it to that championship game, because on the second or third week of the season, we got blown out by Kansas City. I thought it would be Kansas City instead of Oakland that we played. In the first round, we beat Paul Brown's Bengals, and then we had them in the championship game with the mad bomber, Daryl LaMonica, and it was a fairly close game, but I thought, you know, we were just too good for them then. And, of course, we won the game. And then I thought, privately, that we had no chance against Dallas. Looking at Dallas's team, I mean, they should have blown us out in that Super Bowl. They had Dwayne Thomas, who I, again, traded for the following year when I came to the Patriots, and he lasted all of 1 week. But in football, there's the other factor that even talking about the games this weekend, whether it was against Oakland in the championship game and then the Super Bowl against the Dallas Cowboys, you have to somewhere in the game be lucky. You have to somewhere get a lucky bounce, an interception, particularly if the other team's much better. And then again, what were the big breaks at the end? The Morton pass tipped. Mike Curtis, who I drafted number one years before, makes the interception, and the guy that kicks the field goal, who we all thought, oh my God, he's got ulcers, he'll choke, Jim O'Brien, who I had to fight to draft, kicks the winning field goal. Never should have been close. So you need the breaks. You need somebody to do something you never expected doing. You gotta be lucky.
All right, that was Upton Bell, director of player personnel for two Colts Super Bowl teams. Before that, Carl Eller, who's on four Vikings Super Bowl teams. And earlier in the show, Dan Neal, who's on two Super Bowl teams for the Broncos. So that's a total of eight Super Bowls worth of experience on this show for you. And that's why I put this show together, to help you as a fan understand the game and appreciate it at a higher level. Now, I picked the Bengals against the 49ers before the playoffs started, so I'm going to stick with that prediction. But remember, the teams that block better and tackle better throughout the game are going to win just about every single time. I'm Jackson Michael. This is the Game Before the Money. Visit thegamebeforethemoney.com. Check out the Game Before the Money podcast. And tune in next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 8 Pacific.